Okay, so this is Bio 160, and it is Thursday, November 13th, and we're going to finish up lymphatic system today. I have some notes on the floor if you need them, and maybe move on to a respiratory chapter today. I'm not really sure if we'll get that far, because we've got to take a quiz today on lymphatic system as well. So hopefully that's a nice, easy quiz over the first part of the lymphatic and immune system. All right, and according to the syllabus, we're supposed to have a test on Tuesday coming up. But I am going to postpone it until the 20th. That's Thursday. All right, so we're going to make that happen on Thursday. So we're going to have blood, cardiovascular, immunity, and maybe respiratory system on the test. I'm not sure if we're going to have respiratory system or not. We'll see what we can do with that. Okay, now, in the schedule of classes, it says the last day to drop is November 19th, but that's not true. The last day to drop is the 22nd, so we're going to have the next test before the drop date, and I'll have the grades calculated for you after you take the test, and you can take a look and see. All right, so that's not such a big deal. I think that's why I put the test on the 18th, because according to the schedule, it was the 19th, but it's not the 19th. It's the 22nd. Okay, so if you see some friends in class or something, make sure you let them know that the test is not on Tuesday, it's on Thursday, okay? So it's going to be 1 week from today, 1 week from today. Okay, now does anybody have any questions on the lymphatic system, what we were talking about so far, or anything else? No? Okay. Well, we're talking about lymph organs. I gave you a list of the lymph organs, but now let's talk about them in just a little bit more detail to get a better understanding of what they do. Okay, so generally speaking, lymphatic organs contain lymphatic tissue, and I'll have to describe what lymphatic tissue means in just a little bit. I might have to sneeze because I had a lot of dust up here a little while ago. Oh, I'm okay. All right, so I'm not going to sneeze right at the moment. It contains lymphatic tissue, which is composed of lymphocytes. And what kind of cell is a lymphocyte? It's a white blood cell, which is a kind of blood cell, but it's white. That means it fights infections, right? And macrophages. Macrophages were a kind of blood cell as well at one time, but they were called monocytes. And when a monocyte leaves the circulatory system and moves into lymphatic tissue, we change its name. We call it a macrophage. So a monocyte gets turned into a macrophage when it leaves the circulatory system. And so you might wonder, well, how does it leave the circulatory system? It's a shapeshifter. It can conform its body. It can change the shape of the cell. It can squeeze between other cells, and it can crawl around in your body just by squeezing around between different cells. Okay, so when a macrophage leaves the circulatory system, when a monocyte leaves, we call it a macrophage. I don't have a picture of one. Okay. And other kinds of cells. And maybe I'll talk about some of these other cells in a little bit. All right, so lymphocytes originate from red bone marrow and are carried by the blood to lymph organs. All right, and that's where they leave. That's where they spend their existence, in lymphatic tissues. And for instance, if you're ever infected with a microorganism that will gain entrance to your body somehow, maybe you have a flu virus on your fingertip that you got off of a doorknob or who knows where, and you scratch your eye and that touches the mucous membrane of your eye, now that virus can have access to your body. Or you pick your nose or your ear or you bite your fingernails or something like that, that virus gains access to your body, and it starts to infect your body. When it bumps into a lymphocyte, that's going to activate the immune system. All right, and immune system activation just means that these lymphocytes in lymphatic tissue are going to start to divide. We call that through mitosis. We call that proliferation. So proliferation is when you have one lymphocyte, and then two lymphocytes, and then what? Four lymphocytes and eight lymphocytes, so your immune system actually starts to grow. We call that proliferation. So your immune system doesn't get activated until you have this foreign substance enter your body, like a virus or a bacteria or fungus. And when it bumps into a lymphocyte cell, it activates the immune system. So that's what we mean by immune system activation. There has to be lymphocytes in there that come in contact to some kind of foreign object. And remember, how do we tell the blood type of somebody? What's the best way to determine what somebody's blood type is? By the antigens that are on the cell membrane of a red blood cell. So all cells have antigens, little markers on them that define what kind of cell it is, where it belongs to, including viruses and bacteria. So when these viruses and bacteria gain entrance to your body, we just call them antigens. And these are the little markers that are on the cell membranes of these bacteria that your immune system recognizes as being foreign to your body, and then your immune system develops a strategy to kill those things so that they can't cause an infection in you. So things that activate the immune system are what we call antigens, but these are what? Proteins or sugar protein molecules that are on the plasma membrane of cells that are invading your body. Okay, so here are some lymphatic organs, your tonsils. We find those in your throat. It protects the body against pathogens. So what the heck is a pathogen? Bacteria. That would be a good example, but a little bit more general. What is a pathogen? A bacteria. When a bacteria gains access to your body, what does it do? It produces, an infection. It produces a disease state, right? So a pathogen is any kind of substance that, when it enters your body, it produces disease. Like a bacteria or a virus. That's what a pathogen is. So some pathogens that enter your nose and your mouth can be killed by the tonsils. And we have three different kinds of tonsils. There's palatine tonsils. If you open up your mouth and look in a mirror, those are the ones that you can see in the back of your mouth. We call that the posterior oral cavity. You have some pharyngeal tonsils that are in the nasal cavities. We call those adenoids. When we get to the respiratory system, I have a really nice picture, and I'll point where these things are when we look at the respiratory system, which is coming up next. And then we have some lingual tonsils that are underneath your tongue, way in the back. So these are lymphatic tissues that attack pathogens that try to get into your body when we breathe and when we eat something. Okay, and sometimes these can become chronically infected, and we would call that tonsillitis, right? Or chronic tonsillitis, and in which case somebody's going to have a sore throat almost all the time. Somebody might have a sore throat, a really serious sore throat, maybe once a month or twice a month, so serious where you might have to miss school or work. So what does that sound like? That sounds like a pain, right? So the way that we treat that sometimes is with a tonsillectomy. What does that mean? That somebody goes in and you rip that tonsil out, and it gets rid of that chronic infection. And as a result of that, then that person's life has really changed. Instead of being sick once a month or twice a month, they just lead a normal life. It's really kind of a nice, amazing surgery. For a tonsillectomy for a youngster, okay, a child is a relatively easy procedure. They get over it very quickly, right? But in an adult, it's a kind of difficult procedure, and it takes you a long time to get over it. So for instance, right now, if somebody has a gallbladder removed, all right, a lot of times you don't even stay overnight in the hospital anymore. They send you home because they can do it orthoscopically. They hardly open up your stomach anymore. It's a really nice technique, and when they're done, they make sure that your eyes are open and coughing and looking around and stuff, and then they say, okay, time to go home. But for a tonsillectomy, okay, you'll be really, really sick and out of work for 2 weeks because it takes a long time to recuperate from that kind of surgery. Your tonsils are about as big as the tip of your little finger right here, and you got two of those on either side of your throat. So if you were to think of removing that amount of tissue from your throat, you can imagine that you're going to be really sore for a long time until that heals over. Okay, so a tonsillectomy is kind of a tough procedure when you're an adult, but if you have those sore throats every couple times a month, then that's a really good procedure to go through. So if you know anybody like that, you might want to give them some support to get that tonsillectomy, and it will just change their life. They might not get come down with a cold or a flu for a year or two after that. It's just a kind of an amazing thing. Okay, lymph nodes. These are small, round structures. They're actually not necessarily round. They're kind of bean-shaped in structure, all right, that are found along lymph vessels. Lymph has to pass through at least one node before entering into the vein. And we kind of saw where the lymphatic system empties into a vein, but does anybody know exactly what vein the lymphatic system empties into? The subclavian veins. That's right, the right and left subclavian veins. That's where the lymph ducts empty into back into the circulatory system. And along the way, there are some superficial aggregations of lymph nodes in various places of your body that you can palpate. So here is a picture of, right, the thoracic duct emptying into the left subclavian vein. Here's the right lymphatic duct emptying into the right subclavian vein. So this is just returning lymphatic fluid back to your circulatory system. All right, and where do we have these superficial aggregations at? Let me show you. Here's a pretty good picture. Okay, so cervical region. Those are very easy to palpate. If somebody has an infection, and remember, when the immune system gets activated, what happens? The lymphocytes start to proliferate. They start to divide and grow. And so these lymph nodes actually grow and get bigger, and they actually get a little painful as well. So that's why sometimes a clinician might actually palpate your neck to see if you have an infection in that part of your body. Or there's another area here, the axillary region, that's underneath your arms and your armpits. That's a good region to palpate. And then the inguinal region right here. Massive lymph nodes in this region here that can be palpated as well. Okay. So what the heck is the function of a lymph node? You see that it is along the pathway that lymph has to take back to the heart. Well, you don't want to just take lymph and dump it back into the circulatory system. You want to find out if there's anything harmful in the lymph before it gains access to your circulatory system. So the job of these lymph nodes, okay, are to filter lymph and produce lymphocytes if you have bacteria or viruses in lymph. All right, so activation of the immune system happens in a lymph node. We call that lymphocyte cell division. All right, that's just the same thing as proliferation of those lymphocytes by mitosis. There are certain cells in a lymph node that can phagocytize bacteria and viruses. That means just eat them and then lyse them, killing the bacteria. And those would be what? The macrophages. So here's a kind of a little diagram of a lymph node. And you can see that there are numerous vessels that bring lymph into a node. We call these the afferent vessels. And then there's usually one lymphatic vessel that is taking lymph away from the node. That's what we call an efferent vessel. And they might have its own, a lymph node will have its own artery supply, blood supply via this artery in this vein. And in this lymph node right here, we have lymphocytes and macrophages, two kinds of cells. Okay, and if I had to pick one or the other, I would say, well, it's an aggregation of lymphocytes, ready, standing by, ready to fight infection or bacteria or viruses that are found in the lymph as it's coming into this node. So here's the picture in your book. All right, so this kind of looks like a little bean right here. These are the afferent lymphatic vessels. Here's the efferent vessel. And what can you see? What keeps lymph flowing in one direction here? Do you see these little guys right here? And right here, and right here, and here, and here? What are those things? Valves. Those are valves. So lymph can only flow in one direction. So the deep part of a lymph node is what we call the medulla. It contains macrophages and lymphocytes. And a T-cell is just a certain kind of lymphocyte. We're going to look and see what the function of a T-cell is in just a little bit. But that's a special kind of lymphocyte. I don't think this is an exam figure. Okay. but you should at least know that there are lymph vessels that bring lymph to a node, and there's one vessel that takes it away. So lymph flows through this whole area, and when it does, it gets filtered, and it gets processed by these macrophages and lymphocytes so that the lymph that's leaving is not so dangerous to your body. It won't carry so many infectious particles, for instance, if there are any. Ah, B cells, that's another kind of lymphocyte. All right, so when we see a T cell here and a B cell here, that just is, those are just designations for lymphocytes. So the kinds of cells we see in a node are what? Macrophages and lymphocytes, both there to fight infections. And a real picture of a lymphocyte is this one right here. All right, so we can see these things with our naked eye. Right, they're a gross anatomical feature of our body, so this is a lymph node. So it doesn't really look like a pea, it looks more like a little bean, and you can see the various lymphatic vessels connected to it. Okay, another part of the lymphatic system is the spleen. And where's that spleen located? Let me get that picture of the human out here again. All right, the spleen is located in the upper left part of the abdominal cavity, pretty much is right underneath the diaphragm. It's associated with the stomach, so the stomach would be about in this location right here. So this is the spleen. And the job of the spleen is also to filter something. It's not to filter lymph, but it actually filters blood. So blood flows through the spleen because you might have an infection in your blood, you might have bacteria or viruses in your blood, and the spleen filters those particles out, those pathogens. And so don't forget, a pathogen is just anything that can produce disease in your body. The spleen also filters out old red blood cells. Okay, so why do you think that's important? Do you have a lot of old red blood cells in your body? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because how many die every second? Between 2 and 3 million every second. And so it's the job of the spleen to get rid of those things and to start reprocessing the components of the red blood cell so it can be used again. Like proteins are broken down into amino acids, and heme is broken down into iron and bilirubin. Bilirubin then is excreted from the body. Okay, so the spleen is pretty busy doing its job. It can help activate the immune system if you have an infection in your body. And the spleen also acts as a reservoir for red blood cells. So if for whatever reason you hemorrhage, like if you got into an accident or something and you started to lose a lot of blood, your body can get red blood cells in a hurry from the spleen. So that's a good thing to have. The terrible thing about the spleen is that it's easily traumatized. It means it doesn't have a very tough connective tissue capsule around it, and it doesn't have any bones inside of it holding it together. It doesn't have tendons or ligaments on the inside holding it together, so that if it's hit very hard, it has a tendency to rip. Okay? And just like this lymph node right here, all right, it's highly vascular. There's a lot of blood going to the spleen, a lot of small vessels, so that when it rips, it has a tendency to bleed profusely. And since it doesn't have a lot of connective tissue like collagen in it, if someone were to look at the spleen and try to suture it closed wherever that rip was, sutures don't close that that tear in the spleen, because as soon as you put in a suture, it causes what? A further rip. Anytime you put anything into the spleen, it just causes the spleen to rip even more. So when somebody has traumatized the spleen, what has to happen is that it has to be removed from the body. They have to perform a splenectomy, because there's just no way to sew it back up again. Okay, so if that ever happens to anybody, then of course the surgeon has to be careful, because they want to remove the least amount of the spleen as possible, because they don't want to decrease any of these functions inside the person. Right? So they just want to remove the part that's bleeding by, for instance, tying off a small blood vessel to the part that's bleeding. Okay, they can remove that part and hopefully preserve as much of the spleen as possible. All right, the thymus gland, that's another kind of lymphatic organ, and the thymus is located in the mediastinum. Where's the mediastinum at? That's the middle part of the thoracic cavity, right? The heart is in the mediastinum. But where the thymus gland is about in this region right here. It really doesn't go down over the heart. It's more about where the great vessels are, the aorta and the superior vena cava. This is where the thymus gland is. And its function is that it's a site where certain kinds of lymphocytes go to mature. And the kind of lymphocytes that mature in the thymus are what we call the T lymphocytes. That's easy to remember because thymus starts with a T, right? And that's actually how they named that kind of lymphocyte. A T lymphocyte is one that matures in the thymus gland or thymus organ. Okay, what else should we remember? There is another lymphatic organ, and that's the appendix. And sometimes we call that the vermiform appendix. And the appendix is found about in this region of the body right here. And it's a part of the digestive tract. And the function of the appendix right here is to prevent infections or bacteria that are in your digestive tract from entering your body. Because your digestive tract is really a tube, and whatever in that tube is outside your body. It doesn't get inside your body until it leaves that tube and gets into, for instance, your circulatory system or something. And you have many, many good, helpful bacteria in your digestive tract. Some of them even make vitamins for us. And it's the job of this appendix right here to make sure that they stay in the digestive tract and don't start wandering around inside your abdominal cavity or your appendages or up into your thoracic cavity. So that's the job of the appendix. Who's heard of appendix? Anybody ever heard of an appendix? Yeah. It's very common because sometimes it can become chronically infected as well, just like a tonsil. And then what has to happen? Yeah, then you need an appendectomy. They can remove that before it bursts open. And then you're healthy after that. You can live through an appendicitis attack or when it bursts, but you probably won't feel like you want to live through it. You probably are really, really sick, but you certainly can. Why is it that you can remove it?
How does it become infected?
You know, good questions. I'm not sure we really know exactly why some people can get chronically infected tonsils or appendices. Maybe they just, for some reason, ran into a certain kind of bacteria that has some ability to live in that particular tissue, and other people didn't come down with that flu or cold or something. Okay. But it could be maybe diet-related, could be maybe related to inheritance a little bit. So we're not really sure how these things happen. Okay, and it's true for the appendix. So I wouldn't be able to look in the room and recognize somebody and say, oh, you're a good candidate for an appendicitis, or you're a good candidate. We couldn't tell. It just seems to be very random. Okay, so I can't give anybody any hints on how to protect yourself from appendicitis or a chronically inflamed tonsil. All right, so where the appendix is, it's between the junction of the small intestine and large intestine. And we're going to talk about the digestive tract pretty soon. So you don't have to know what I'm talking about today where that is, but when we get to the digestive system, it probably is a good idea that you've heard of some of these terms already. So the appendix is on the first part of the large intestine, which is what we call the cecum. And the ileum is the last part of the small intestine. So ileocecal junction, this is the junction between the small intestine and large intestine. So eventually you're going to have to know something about that. Okay, so that's pretty much it for lymphatic tissue. Oh no, here's a good picture of the thymus gland. Right here, you can see it's in the mediastinum, in the thoracic cavity. Okay. And that's where T lymphocytes go to mature. All right, well, let's change topic. Instead of just talking about anatomy a little bit, let's talk about immunity or the body's self-defense system. Okay. So your defense system is what we call resistance. It provides resistance to infections. And that is the ability to resist damage from foreign substances, in particular, what? Pathogens, for instance. And what does a foreign substance have, what does a pathogen have on the cell membrane that our body is able to recognize to know that it's not a cell that belongs in our body? It's got an antigen, right? That's the surface marker on cells that distinguishes all cells as being belonging to your body or not belonging to your body. Okay, so you have the ability to resist damage from foreign substances if they have these antigens. So there are two kinds of immunity. There's something we call nonspecific, and there is something called specific. So we'll talk a little bit about these two different kinds. The nonspecific has a constant response time. So for nonspecific ways that you protect your body can't learn from day to day how to do it any better, or from year to year, or decade to decade. So one way that you can protect your body from infection is by sneezing. So if you get something irritating in your nasal cavity, you're going to sneeze, and what's going to happen to that irritating substance in your nasal cavity? It's going to be expelled from your body. But the way you sneeze today probably was the way you sneezed yesterday, right? Did you learn how to sneeze any better? No. Okay, or 10 years ago. So that's what we call nonspecific. All right, that's a constant response time. So nonspecific resistance produces an identical response time for repeat infections. So some good examples of that is that each time a bacteria enters your body, it is phagocytized with the same speed and efficiency by what kind of cell? What kind of cell phagocytizes bacteria? Macrophages. That's right. So macrophages don't get any more efficient as you get older, right? They're crawling around your body, gobbling up stuff that shouldn't be there, but they just do that at the same pace all the time. Specific immunity, on the other hand, means that the response time for repeat infections is faster and more efficient. That's a nice thing, due to the ability to recognize specific antigens and remember them. So to recognize and remember a particular path antigen, and your body stores information on how to fight that pathogen. So once you've learned how to fight a particular infection, right, the next time you're infected with that pathogen, your body knows how to fight it, and you might not even realize that you've been infected with something again. Like, for instance, we probably all have had chicken pox in here. No, some people haven't. Maybe it's not very prevalent anymore. But you only get chicken pox really once in your life, because once you get that infection, your body knows how to recognize those viruses and has figured out a way how to defeat them and kill them, right? And then that information is stored so that if those viruses ever gain entrance to your body, then your immune system automatically gets turned on, becomes activated, and produces things to kill those viruses in just a matter of hours, and you probably don't even know you've been infected with that virus again. Okay? And that's kind of the basis of vaccines. Okay. All right, so let's talk about some non-specific resistance mechanisms. There are mechanical mechanisms, and mechanical mechanisms sometimes just prevent entry of pathogens into your body. And a good thing to remember for that is your integument. Your skin keeps out all kinds of pathogens. We're surrounded by pathogens. And as long as you have good, healthy skin without a lot of holes in it, that will protect yourself from infections, right? And I remember people were talking about after this one really terrible hurricane a couple years ago that hit New Orleans. What was the name of that hurricane? Yeah, that was Katrina. And the whole city flooded, or major parts of the city flooded, and everybody thought there was going to be a lot of epidemics in that area. And then somebody came on the news and said, well, you know what, these people can walk around in this terribly contaminated water, but as long as their skin is okay, that will keep the bacteria out. Okay, but if they were hurt during the hurricane, like had cuts in their skin or feet or something, and got some of that contaminated material in the cut, then they would get an infection. And true enough, hardly anybody really got sick because their skin kept all of that nasty stuff out of their bodies, right? So that's just the mechanical mechanism for preventing entry. Your skin is real important. Some other mechanical means could include tears in your eyes, right? So you have tears from the lacrimal gland flushing over the surface of your eye. It's very easy for your eye to pick up bacteria and viruses, but those tears wipe the bacteria and viruses away, Same thing for saliva. Okay, it washes bacteria out of your mouth. Urine. Okay, when you urinate, you flush bacteria out of your urinary bladder. And that helps prevent infections, urinary bladder infections. In the membranes of your lungs, okay, they are lined with a ciliated membrane. So what does cilia mean to you? It means that there's little cell projections coming off the surface of a cell. They're there for motility, so they're all sweeping all the time. And in your trachea, which is your windpipe, they're sweeping up, and so that particles that we breathe in, like bacteria, they're swept up out of our body, and then, okay, you can sneeze them out of your body, cough them out, or swallow them down, and then they get digested, and they can't produce an infection. There's another class of nonspecific resistance. We call these chemical mediators, and these are due to lysozyme in tears and saliva. Remember a lysosome? A lysosome was an organelle inside of a cell filled with digestive enzymes. And so these digestive enzymes are in saliva and tears, and they just digest bacteria. And when they get digested, then they get killed. Histamine promotes inflammation by vasodilating and increasing capillary permeability. That produces swelling and edema. That helps fight infection as well. And then there are some cells that secrete a bunch of enzymes. Together we call this complement. And complement is like lysozyme. It just digests things. It digests bacteria and viruses, breaks them down, and then they can't produce infections. Okay, so these are all nonspecific because over the years that you're alive, your body doesn't get any better at doing these things, and it can't recognize a pathogen from a previous infection. So that's why we call this nonspecific resistance. Okay. I don't know if you have that page. You have that page? You got that page? Well, there's just some other corollaries to nonspecific. Okay. Interferons are kind of special. They're chemical mediators, and it's a part of nonspecific resistance. Whenever a cell becomes infected with a virus, so this little blue thing right here is a really small virus particle, when it gets inside of a cell, right, it takes over the cell, the genetic material of the cell, and starts to produce proteins and DNA for this particular virus. And so this cell now, before it releases these new viruses, right, it actually gets killed. So now you have thousands of new virus particles that can infect thousands of other cells in your body. Well, this cell is the fate of this cell is doomed to die. But before it dies, when it realizes that it's infected with a virus, it secretes a chemical called an interferon. And this interferon goes to another cell, and as long as this cell is not infected, it teaches this non-infected cell how to prevent from becoming infected with this virus particle. So an interferon is pretty helpful because it can protect healthy cells from becoming infected with viruses. So that's the job of an interferon. All right? It helps produce antiviral proteins that protect a non-infected cell from infection. And these interferons don't get any better with repeat infections. They work just as good the first time as the second time. And nonspecific resistance also relates to all white blood cells except for lymphocytes. So macrophages can't learn how to fight infection and the other kinds of white blood cells. But lymphocytes are the special kind. They can actually learn how to fight an infection from a previous infection. And so that's what we're going to talk about next. Activity due to lymphocytes, and that relates to specific resistance. So specific resistance is the ability to recognize, respond, and remember a particular pathogen. But there has to be some point in your life where this pathogen or antigen had to infect your body. If it never infected your body, then you can't recognize it. It's not passed on from mother to child or through DNA. you actually have to have that infection in order for specific resistance to be acquired. Okay, so there are molecules which stimulate specific resistance. And those molecules are called antigens, and those are on the cell membranes of most cells. So what are some foreign antigens? Well, there could be things like parasites, okay, bacteria, viruses, and even toxins are considered antigens. So could anybody give me an example of a toxin that your body would learn how to fight? Like if you ever got bit by a rattlesnake, that venom would be considered an antigen, right? Just by the shape of that molecule, your body would know it doesn't belong in there, okay? And then there are some things that are called self-antigens, things that don't belong in your body, like tumors. And even sometimes there is a condition called autoimmune disease where lymphocytes or your immune system thinks that a certain part of your body, because of the antigens in that part of your body, don't belong to you. And then the immune system develops a strategy to attack and kill those cells, even though they belong to you, and it's really a terrible disease kind of process. And that's how we understand multiple sclerosis to be, where a person's own immune system attacks the Schwann cells or the oligodendrocytes in a person's brain and destroys the myelin sheath, and that destroys the nervous tissue in a person's brain. The person's own body is doing that. And arthritis, in particular rheumatoid arthritis, where a person's own immune system starts to attack a person's joints and the cartilage of joints, and that can be a deadly disease as well. Okay, so what about specific resistance? It results from white blood cell activity. In particular, what kind of white blood cell? Lymphocyte. This lymphocyte. Lymphocyte activity produces specific resistance. So remember, specific resistance is the kind where you can recognize, respond, and remember a particular pathogen from a previous infection that you've had. And we've got two kinds of lymphocytes in our body. At least in this class, we're going to learn about two kinds of lymphocytes. We've got B cells and T cells. So a B cell is a lymphocyte, and a T cell is also a lymphocyte. All right, say they all have originated from a lymphocyte. And it's pretty easy to figure out what these two kinds are. The B lymphocytes, or the B cells, when I say B cell, it's the same thing as saying a B lymphocyte, produces proteins called antibodies. And we've run into an antibody before. Where did we see an antibody? And what kind of process was it involved with? Like agglutination, right? When somebody has a transfusion reaction and red blood cells start to clump together, there is an antibody that will grab two red blood cells, stick them together, right? And then two more, so thousands of red blood cells will get stuck together with antibodies between them, and then the red blood cells break down. That's what a transfusion reaction is. That's what we call agglutination. All right, so these B cells are the ones that produce antibodies to fight infections. So because it's producing antibodies, we say that B cells produce antibody-mediated immunity. Right, so these antibodies are actually clumping cells together and then lysing them down. So this is the result of B cells or B lymphocyte activity. So when you see antibody, you're going to think B. Right. Okay. The other kind are T cells. T cells are contact killers. So this kind of lymphocyte it doesn't pump out an antibody that floats around in the circulatory system. A T lymphocyte actually has to bump into that bacteria or a virus. It has to have physical contact. And when it has physical contact, that's when the T lymphocyte then starts to lyse the bacteria, breaking it down and killing it. So contact killer cells, or T lymphocytes, produce something we call cell-mediated immunity. Because why do we call that cell-mediated immunity? Because the cells actually have to touch each other. The antibody is not active in this kind of immunity. So how are you going to remember a T cell produces contact killing or cell mediated? Because I want you to know that cell mediated immunity means that the cells have to contact each other. They got to touch each other. And what do you got in contact? A lot of T's. Okay, and those are the T cells that kill bacteria. All right, the B cells, how do B cells fight infection? By producing antibodies. Yeah, by producing antibodies. And the contact killers just do it by touching something. Okay. All right, so here is a little quiz. Antibody mediated immunity. Okay, antibody mediated immunity. What kind of immunity is that? Is that nonspecific or specific? Nonspecific or specific? It's specific because... Okay, well, let's develop that concept a little bit. What kind of cell is responsible for antibody-mediated immunity? It's going to be a lymphocyte of some kind, and in particular, the B. The B lymphocyte produces antibodies, right? So if it has to do with any kind of lymphocyte, it's got to be specific immunity because lymphocytes learn how to fight that pathogen, and they store that information. Okay, so antibody-mediated immunity is due to the B cells. It works well for extracellular antigens. That means things that are outside of cells in your circulatory system, things that don't get inside the cell. All right, so this is what happens. An antigen has to bind to a receptor on a B lymphocyte. All right, so some part of that infecting cell has to bind to a B lymphocyte. And then this B lymphocyte is going to start to divide by mitosis. And it's actually going to differentiate into two different cell lines. It's going to produce plasma cells. All right, these plasma cells will stay inside of a lymph node. And the plasma cell's job is to produce antibodies. All right, and the way that that works is that this antibody, remember an antibody's got like two arms on it and two hands? And the shape of the hand has to match up to the shape of this antigen so that it can grab onto it, just like for a transfusion reaction. All right, so it takes a little time to figure out how to make these antibodies because they have to have just the right particular shape in order to grab onto these antigens. So the plasma cells make these antibodies, and it takes about almost 2 weeks, 14 days, to produce enough antibodies to fight that infection. So if you have an infection that doesn't respond to some kind of chemical treatment, how long are you going to be sick for? About 2 weeks. So for instance, when you get the flu or something, right, people have the flu for about 2 weeks. It takes you about 2 weeks to get over it because it takes that long for these B lymphocytes to recognize that antigen and then divide into plasma cells and then have those plasma cells make enough antibodies to fight that infection. Now, can you say if it was a flu, that's due to a virus, can you take an antibiotic to fight the flu? No, because an antibiotic only works on bacteria, right? So we don't have any antiviral agents that are very good. The only one that I've mentioned so far in here is called interferon, and that's still kind of an experimental drug, only used in a very few kinds of circumstances. And it's very, very expensive. I don't think if all of us put money together, we could afford to buy enough interferon to help somebody. Okay, it's so expensive. All right, so when somebody has an infection from a virus, you have to be able to, what? Be able to live for at least 14 days for your own body to fight that infection. But if you're not strong enough to fight that infection, what happens? Well, then you die, and there's really not a whole lot that we can do to help somebody for viral infections. Okay, including the flu. So, guess what time of year it is? It's flu season, almost, but the time of year is flu shot season. Okay, so everybody should probably get a flu shot especially if you have any elderly at home, if your grandma and grandparents are still around, or little kids, because when you get a flu shot, it not only protects you from getting the flu, but it protects you from transmitting the flu to other people. Okay? So I know a lot of people don't like to get shots. I don't like to get shots, but it's really a good idea to get a flu shot, not just for protecting yourself, but from your for your family members as well. Okay. Okay. So the flu can be very deadly, and every once in a while, maybe every 50 years or so, there's a very deadly strain of the flu that even kills millions of people around the world. Probably the next time it will even be more than millions of people, because now there are a whole lot more people in the world than there were 50 years ago. All right, so this B lymphocyte, once it becomes activated and it starts to proliferate, don't forget a lymph node gets bigger because there are more cells in that lymph node now. And a second kind of cell that's produced is a memory B cell. Guess what the job of this memory B cell is? It remembers the shape of this antigen, so that if you're ever infected again in another point in your life, then this memory cell can turn into a plasma cell almost immediately and start producing tons of antibodies. It starts fighting that infection before you even know that you were infected with this antigen a second time. So memory B cells are important for long-lasting immunity, and they're contained in lymph nodes as well. So memory B cells produce something that we call a secondary response. A secondary response is when a memory B cell, okay, can start pumping out antibodies when you have a repeat infection for something. And the secondary response is a faster response time. It will produce antibodies within a few hours as opposed to, what, 2 weeks for the first infection. And it's more effective response because many, many more antibodies are produced. So not only faster, but even more antibodies the second time. And that's due to the B cell. So if we look at a graph of primary response versus secondary response, all right, so here's a plot of plasma antibody concentration. These are things that fight infections, right? They combine to antigens. And here is a time scale in days. Notice that this primary response before it can start to have an effect on your body is about at this region right here. Okay, it takes about 2 weeks. And then you're cleared of that antigen, you know, in about a month or so. So this is the primary response. But if somebody has been infected the first time, okay, after this primary response, that produces, if somebody gets infected a second time, this line right here. So what do we got? Is that red and green or something?
Red and orange.
Red and orange. This orange light, right, this orange line right here represents the secondary response. So these antibodies, so this red line right here pretty much is due to what, plasma antibody concentration? What cell is producing these antibodies? Okay, it starts with a B cell, but remember, where did it go? What has to happen for a B cell? It's got to start to divide and proliferate, and it's going to make a plasma cell. So the plasma cells are responsible for what? This red line right here. They come from B cells. Okay, so this is due to production of antibodies from plasma cells, which come from B cells. But now this orange line, what kind of cell is producing this orange response? This one right here. That was absent down over here. This is ringing a bell. This is a memory B cell. Okay, because this memory cell knows how to identify that antigen right away, and it knows how to make the antibody right away. So as soon as that antigen gets in your body, these memory B cells turn into plasma cells and start pumping out, what, just tons of antibody, and it fights that infection so that you don't even know that you've been infected with that particular pathogen again. Okay, so that's the B cell or antibody mediated immunity. And then the last kind is the cell-mediated immunity. What kind of cell produces cell-mediated immunity?
T-cells.
The T-cells, because what kind of killing do they go through?
Contact
killers. Yeah, they're contact killers. I don't know if anybody saw that Star Trek episode.
No?
No? It was a pretty good one. You've heard of Star Trek, right? I don't know if this is past your time already or not. But the Enterprise was coming to a new planet, okay? But this planet was very ethnocentric and ethnophobic. It didn't like to receive visitors from off-world. So when Enterprise went there, they went into orbit and they said, oh, hi, I'd like to meet you guys. But those guys were really ticked off. So what they did, the way that they protected their planet was that they were able to scan the life forms on the Enterprise and then develop robots that took the same shape as the people that were on the Enterprise. So there was a robot that looked just like Captain Kirk and Spock and Dr. McCoy. Okay, but they were really bombs. So they were robot bombs. And if the robot for Captain Kirk were to touch any of the crew members, nothing would happen. He would have to touch Captain Kirk specifically to kill him. Okay, so there were like thousands of robots running around, but it was really easy to protect everybody because if Captain Kirk's robot was going to try and touch him, well, then anybody could step in front of him and block him, right? So that was probably a takeoff of this contact killer mode right here. So these contact killers can only kill, what, one kind of bacteria, and they have to touch it before it can kill them. Okay. So these work pretty good for intracellular antigens. There is a primary response where an antigen has to bind on a receptor of a T lymphocyte, right? And that produces cytotoxic T cells. So these T lymphocytes become activated as well. They start to proliferate and grow. And when they become activated, these cytotoxic T cells promote inflammation in an area. That means that area starts to fill up with blood. It gets red. It gets hot. These cytotoxic T cells also promote phagocytosis by macrophages of that particular antigen and also contact killing. When that activated T cell bumps into a bacteria, it will blow it up. It will lyse it. And it also produces memory T cells for what? The secondary response. So that if you're infected a second time by that same antigen, those contact killers become activated very quickly and you hardly ever notice then that you were infected with that particular cell. All right, so that's what I want you to know about immunity. Let me take a look at your notes real quick. Yeah, that's it. Good. There's a lot more fun stuff in immunity to talk about, but I'm going to have to take another class to do that. So let's do the end of chapter review notes, and then you can ask some questions, and then we'll take a quiz. All right. So where do you get a lot of good information to answer these questions?
No.
Yeah, from your notes. But it's not a bad idea to read the chapter too. So let's see if I have the same questions here that you do. Oh, what 8 items make up the lymphatic system? Oh, wow, I don't know. That number changes. What do we got? We got lymph,
lymphocytes,
lymph vessels, lymph nodes, tonsils, spleen, thymus gland, and appendix. That's 8. Okay, so that's good. Yeah, don't forget about that appendix. That might not be in your notes. I had it written down. What are the 4 main functions of the lymphatic system? Maintains fluid balance because you have a buildup of tissue fluid in interstitial spaces, and then that flows back to your circulatory system via lymphatic vessels. That's number 1.
Fat absorption.
When we get to the digestive system, I'll have to show you a picture of the lymphatic capillary that absorbs fat. Does anybody know what that is? What it's called? The vessel that absorbs fat. Oh, yeah, that's number four. What absorbs fat from the gastrointestinal tract? Yeah, it's a special lymphatic vessel called a lacteal. It's a lacteal. All right, so, well, that's two functions.
A body defense system.
Body defense system is number three. What about number four? I don't know. I only got three. Maintains fluid balance, absorbs fat, body self-defense system. And I guess you could say the body self-defense system is different than getting rid of red blood cells. Okay, so getting rid of old and damaged red blood cells could be number four. All right, so filtering blood. And filtering lymph would be body self-defense system. Okay, so when somebody has a splenectomy, guess what happens to them? What happens to their immune response? Probably goes down, right? Then what's one complication of any kind of surgery that you have? Infection is a complication of any kind of surgery. So if you have a surgery to remove your spleen, guess what the complication for infection is? Does it go up or down? It goes up. So it's always a good idea to hold on to your spleen if you can. Okay, what produces lymph? Lymph is a fluid, okay? And lymphocytes are white blood cells we find in lymph or lymphatic tissue. So I wouldn't say that a lymphocyte produces lymph. It sounds like that would be a reasonable thing to do. But where does lymph come from? We'll work backwards. Lymph is the stuff that's inside a lymphatic vessel. And where does that fluid come from? From the interstitial fluid around cells. And where does that fluid around cells come from? Somebody told me the right answer for this one already. It comes from the plasma in the blood. So plasma is just the fluid part of blood. So plasma leaves through a capillary, flows around tissues, or flows around cells in a tissue. And it doesn't always get resorbed by a capillary. It flows into a lymphatic capillary, and then the lymph vessels take it back to a subclavian vein someplace, either the right or left subclavian vein. So what produces lymph? Well, that's where it comes from. What produces lymph? I don't know if I like that question anymore. What produces lymph? I guess interstitial fluid produces lymph. Interstitial fluid. Number four, what absorbs fat from the GI tract? Lacteal. Know what lymph with fat is called? It's called chyle. It's a milky white thing. And that's where I think lacteal gets its name from, because lacto means milk, which is kind of white, right? So chyle is kind of a takeoff on milk. What does it look like? Oh, it looks white, yeah. Number five, what structure filters lymph? Lymph nodes, that's right. So lymph, as it's going from the tissue spaces back to the subclavian vein, has to go through at least one lymph node. So it can be filtered of these pathogens. What structure filters blood?
Spleen.
Yeah, not a node, but the spleen in particular. It looks for pathogens, but the spleen also looks for old and damaged red blood cells. Where does lymph begin? What structure? A lymph capillary. So interstitial fluid gets absorbed by a lymph capillary, and then it becomes lymph. What prevents the retrograde flow of lymph? The valves, that's right. There are valves. What parts of the body drain into the thoracic duct? And which go into the right lymphatic duct? Thoracic duct is the left side of the head, the left thorax, okay, and then both sides of the abdomen, both sides of the pelvis, and both lower appendages. The right lymphatic duct drains lymph from the right side of the head and the right side of the chest and the right upper appendage. But that's it. Not the right leg. So probably should look at that picture that's in your book. It shows that really nice. So there's some interesting asymmetry there. I don't know if I have this as a question, but when a lymphatic vessel gets blocked, what happens to the tissue?
Swells.
Yeah, it swells up. But what's the official clinical term for that swelling?
Edema.
Edema. Yeah, it's called edema. I don't know if I have that on my list right here to know, but you should probably know that. Okay. What kind of cells is lymphatic tissue composed of? Yeah, lymphocytes. And you got what? B lymphocytes, T lymphocytes, macrophages, right? Also make lymphatic tissue. And what kind of blood cell is a lymphocyte? It's a white blood cell. It's a special kind of white blood cell. Yep. What is immune system activation? And what activates the immune system? Immune system activation is when what kind of cell? It's a lymphocyte. When a lymphocyte bumps into? Yeah, when it bumps into what? What activates the immune system? What activates a lymphocyte? Pathogen. That would be okay to say, but a more common term, a term that we use more commonly instead of pathogen would be an antigen. All right, so an antigen probably is a better way of saying that. Okay, so when a lymphocyte bumps into an antigen, that lymphocyte starts to proliferate. It starts to undergo mitosis. It starts to divide. And it starts to figure out a way how to kill that antigen, either through antibody-mediated immunity or cell-mediated immunity. Antibody is produced by B cell, cell-mediated by those contact killers. What's the function of the tonsils? Yeah, prevents your body from pathogens that try to get into your body from your nose and mouth. And what is a lymph node? Well, we said it does what? It filters lymph. And if there are antigens in lymph, that activates the immune system. So then the lymphocytes proliferate inside a lymph node and figure out how to kill that particular antigen. Where are some superficial aggregations found? Cervical region, axillary region, and inguinal region. Inguinal region, right? Those are easy to find. Name the lymph vessel which brings lymph to a node. Afferent. And which kind of vessel carries it away? Efferent. What's the difference between nonspecific and specific immunity? What about nonspecific first? Nonspecific. Does nonspecific require lymphocytes?
No,
it doesn't require lymphocytes. Because a sneeze, you don't need lymphocytes to sneeze. You don't need lymphocytes for the skin acting as a mechanical barrier just to keep bacteria out of your body. So nonspecific just means that it has a constant response time. Your skin doesn't learn how to protect you from bacteria as you get older. And specific immunity is due to lymphocytes, in particular lymphocytes. And the nice thing about lymphocytes is that they can remember antigens. They can recognize, remember, and respond to antigens when you have a repeat infection. So it can produce long-lasting immunity. Okay, so let's give some examples of non-specific resistance. Skin, mechanical barrier is skin. Tears, that just flushes bacteria out of that part of your body, like your eyes. Sneezing, coughing. Okay, just getting these bacteria out of your body. And number 15, and I think we're going to maybe answer some of the, after 15 we'll answer the rest of these next time. What kind of molecules stimulate specific resistance? What kind of molecules? So I wouldn't say pathogens here, but what kind of molecules? These molecules have the wrong shape to belong to your body. And they're called antigens, right? And antigens could be things on the plasma membrane. It could even be venoms, for instance, or other kinds of toxic compounds. I'll finish up with that next time, too. All right, so next time, there is not a test. We're going to cover respiratory system. Next time, we're going to have a test on Thursday. But before you go today, we got a quiz. So please put all your books away. Put them on the floor. This is an individual effort, like always. And I do have the key made out, so if you want to find the results of your quiz right after everybody's done, I'll meet you by the dinosaur head.